John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network. I welcome Bob Zimmerman. He keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going to stay on planet Earth for a while because there's a lot of engineering to examine and the politics of engineering. Bob's website watches commercial space, watches big space, and then we're going to do some space exploring. But right now, we're looking at an innovation that Bob has been identifying for some time as necessary, which is satellite docking. Satellite docking. Why is that important to dock with another satellite? Bob, a very good evening to you. What is Northrop Grumman's business plan here? Good evening.
Good evening, John. Well, this is more than just simply docking one satellite to another. This is the use of one satellite robot to extend or bring back to life defunct satellites. It's a way, the cost plan here from Northrop Grumman, this was actually designed when Orbital ATK existed and then was merged into Northrop Grumman, so it's actually that division's idea. They build these, what they call MEVs, Mission Extension Vehicles. It's a small satellite with autonomous design to able to dock, and it's designed to dock with the nozzle that's on geosynchronous satellites for the engine that raised this satellite up to geosynchronous orbit. So once that orbit is reached, that nozzle is not used anymore, the fuel's gone, and it just sits there. And so this MEV was designed to use that nozzle as a docking port. And they've flown two of them. The second one was launched, and that's the news hook. The first one docked successfully with a defunct geosynchronous communication satellite and put it back into operation for 5 more years. And the second one, just recently in the last few weeks, successfully docked with an operational communication satellite so they could extend its life for 5 more years. And that's the business plan, John. Communication satellites can cost a lot of money, $350 million to build. The MEV can cost considerably less. And so you could put one of those up there and save a satellite for a lot less money instead of building a whole new one. And in fact, Northrop Grumman's plan is to launch a bunch of these. They've had paid to have two launched already. And then what they'll do is after they've extended the life of the satellite for 5 years, that's the contract, they can either renew the contract, make more money, or undock and go off and save a different satellite with these, move from satellite to satellite. So that's the idea. And I have a picture on Behind the Black of the approach to the geosynchronous communication satellite. And you can see the nozzle that they're going to dock to in this picture. And it's really cool. They've done this now twice. And come down the road, this is leading to the whole business of in-orbit service repair, clean up space junk. It's a whole cottage industry that's going to develop within the aerospace industry in orbit. Instead of just simply putting up satellites that do stuff, there's going to be a whole industry of working with the things in orbit, either repairing them, extending them, fixing them or removing them, and that's what this is about.
Yes, Bob, this connects to a news item you anticipated. I was looking at it today in Science Magazine. Light pollution from space junk and satellites may have already robbed the entire Earth of the dark skies best for sensitive astronomical observations. Researchers estimated the size and shininess of tens of thousands of objects in orbit as of 2020, before an onslaught of thousands more satellites that companies plan to launch in the coming years. Even at Earth's darkest sky, The sky glows from natural sources such as ionized particles, but the existing orbiting objects reflect and scatter about 10% more of this diffuse light back into the atmosphere, the research team calculates. What they're looking at, Bob, is the diminution of the effectiveness of earthbound telescopes. So the most powerful telescopes are the ones that we need for long periods of time to look at distant galaxies. If we could remove that junk, and that's what you're talking about. That's a practical application of junk removing for hard science.
I would say this, though, John, that for astronomers, it's a Pyrrhic victory to get some of that junk out of the way. Their bottom line is to just simply get their telescopes out of the Earth's atmosphere and into space. It's a different problem for them. They are spinning their wheels to think cleaning up space junk will solve their problem. It won't. However, in space, there is a real need to get rid of the junk because It limits the orbits. It puts a threat to whatever objects you are using in orbit by junk that's there. So there's a real need for this, and so someone's going to make money on it down the road. And MEV is an example of the start of that.
This is a reality movie. It's called the SLS. The SLS survived its static fire test, and now because there must be a Bob, a little jingle that goes along when SLS is making its way to Florida. Why is it going to Florida?
Well, it's going to be launched from Florida. The core stage is what they did the static fire test in. The first stage of SLS is made up of a core stage, uses liquid fuel, and then two solid rocket boosters strapped on the sides. And so the core stage is now going to be shipped by barge to Florida, where it's going to be put into the vehicle assembly building, and it'll be assembled with those strap-on solid rocket boosters, as well as the upper stage, which in addition to that, the Orion capsule that'll go on the top. And this is presently scheduled for a November launch of this year. Now, it's pretty clear from scheduling that moving the thing by barge in April is not – it's going to take them 10 months from that point, they say, probably, to get the whole thing assembled ready for launch. Well, it's less than 10 months to November. So we're now looking at a likely launch date for SLS in the February-March period of 22. And so that's where we stand. That will be, you know, it was originally going to launch in like 16, 17. And so we're now 5 years behind schedule. And that's $3 billion a year. So that's $15 billion over budget. And it's like $60 billion to get this launched. The pace of construction of this thing is really bad. It's going to take 10 months to get the core stage from its assembly place to the launch pad. That's a long time. That limits the number of launches you can do on this thing. It just can't do many launches because it takes so long to assemble it. I also think at this point that the odds of Starship Super Heavy being built privately by SpaceX, totally with private funds, the odds of it completing its first orbital launch before this SLS launch is probably 50-50. With a spring 22 SLS launch date now, and SpaceX aiming to do its first Starship orbital launch before the end of this year, I think SpaceX has a very good chance of winning this race, John. Very good chance.
Russia. Russia is an aggressor, and right now there are questions about why it's demonstrating off the borders of Ukraine. We know that the Biden administration is at odds with Russia. The Secretary of State has made sharp words, very clear about there are limits to what will and will not be accepted by the U.S. When it comes to Russian space, however, there's been a sharing understanding these last decades because that was the way to and from the ISS. Bob, you report, however, that the Commerce Department is now sanctioning Russia in a way that affects space trade. How so?
Well, okay. The Commerce Department in March announced that it's going to, because Russia violated international law by using chemical weapons against specific dissidents, both inside and outside Russia. In one case, they used a nerve agent against a military officer and his daughter in the UK. And in another case, they used the same nerve agent against an opposition figure in Russia. Because of this, the Commerce Department is now changing the rules for doing international trade with Russia. They're sanctioning them. You're going to have to get clearance to do any work with Russia. They, however, put in some waivers when it came to space, very specifically. In terms of government space flight, this has to do with ISS and the partnership between the U.S. and Russia to run ISS. They basically waived this sanction. There'll be no changes in how they do things at ISS because of this. But with commercial spaceflight, they said that they're gonna hold off instituting these sanctions till September 1st. So you got about 6 months to still do things as you've been doing it. But any further commercial trade using Russian rockets or Russian space equipment is going to need a waiver from the State and Commerce Department. And until they give that waiver, you won't have the right to do it. And this is really going to be a real – if this once this happens, the real impact is going to be to Russia's Soyuz rocket, which they're trying to sell as a commercial launch vehicle for CubeSats as well as for launching the OneWeb commercial internet satellite constellation. Well, OneWeb, though it's owned by the UK and an Indian company, it's built, the satellites are built in the US, so they're going to have a problem. They will have a problem after September 1st putting their satellites on Soyuz rockets, which are the main bulk of satellites, of rockets, of where the satellites are being launched. And Russia is trying to sell its rocket to CubeSat launches, and that's going to be blocked by this. It's going to hurt Russia, I think, pretty badly, their space industry, this whole decision.
Bob, help me understand. Cape Canaveral, it's at the edge of the at the coastline, yes, but isn't it surrounded by a precious wetland with incredibly delicate birds and flora and fauna? Do I remember correctly?
You are absolutely correct. And in fact, the establishment of Cape Canaveral Spaceport, where, you know, the Kennedy Space Center, was what created that wildlife refuge. And for more than a half a century, it's been a remarkable success in protecting wildlife. Because even though there are launches, in general, it's kept all development out of the region, and it's allowed that wildlife to prosper. The launches have not done any serious harm. That's correct, John.
So we race to Boca Chica, Texas, and Bob has a whopper of a story. Now, Bob, you've got to promise me that you won't get too excited here, all right? Fine. Science teacher in nearby, I believe he's in Brownsville, but nearby, a science teacher has come forward with a paper demonstrating that the SpaceX activity, in specific Starship 11 and other demonstrations to build the Starship to go to Mars, is damaging the habitat of, I guess, everything that lives in Texas, Bob. How is it you can damage Texas, but you can't damage Florida? Does that make sense?
No, it makes no sense at all. In fact, this guy, this science teacher, his paper is not really a research paper. It's just a rant that he posted on the web in Google Docs. It's not peer-reviewed. It's not really science. There's no footnotes. There's no links. There's no references. It's just a political rant, environmental rant, against the evil of SpaceX activity that's going to kill all aquatic, both vertebrae and vertebrae near SpaceX. It's a joke. It's actually a joke.
It might create a black hole right there in Texas, Bob, and suck everything in and destroy Mexico and Texas. Well, things.
The problem with this, though, John, is, and I'm trying not to get too excited, but the problem with this is that unfortunately the press doesn't do much research and they just promote this this anti-SpaceX.
Well, we're promoting it,
and it might actually environmentally block future Starship flights and tests, because the Biden administration is very prone to buy into this kind of environmental propaganda.
We can also look forward to the fact that Boca Chica and the surrounding area will return to wildlife the way it existed several thousand years ago, which is what happens at Cape Canaveral. So
that's what would happen if they just let this proceed. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
The UAE is on target for more astronauts, Bob. This is exciting. They're spending money.
Well, the UAE is spending a lot of money to develop its space program and by buying the expertise of others and buying that expertise, using it to train their own people. So, for example, their orbiter around Mars right now is built by U.S. universities, but using UAE students to do it. And so those students learned how to build satellites as they did it, and now they run the satellite in Mars orbit. Well, the UAE has already put one astronaut in space using a Soyuz rocket and being trained by the Russians. They've now announced two more astronauts for their program. This totals four. One of whom, by the way, the new ones, is a woman, which shows that they are definitely trying to prove that they are moderating the more oppressive aspects of Islam by having a woman astronaut. But they're going to also have these trained in the United States, which suggests that they will very likely purchase astronaut flights from an American commercial company, likely SpaceX's Dragon. They haven't announced that yet, but they're now training two more astronauts. They have four in their whole corps, one of whom flown. And they will probably have a second flight, and it'll probably be on an American. So this is capitalism for us, and it's development for them. It's a good deal.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show. On to space exploring. We're on to the planet Mars. CBS Audio Network.